Parshat, we're in Parshat Truma, Safshin. Please. Okay. Are you kidding? Yeah, be comfortable. Okay. I want to, today we're going to talk about Parshat Truma, and as we move into these Parshiot, Parshat Truma, next week is Tetzaveh, Vayakel, Fekudeh, and then in Vayikra, the challenge of these Parshiot is, as I admit to many people, is when you read through the Parshiot, one of the big challenges is they seem very boring. I mean, I don't know about you, but if you were to read them in English, if somebody were to give you, you know, like Shemot is great, the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, and even Mishpatim, the different laws, but if you were to read through these, you know, if I gave you somebody's series of blueprints to read about your house, you know, and the kitchen cabinets were 7 feet long, and you know they have to be 3 feet wide, and they have handles. I mean, you know, it's an architect's delight, but for the rest of us, it's hard to get into. You know, and that's a real challenge of these parshiyot, especially even if you get to Vayikra. So you have the korban ola of the bird, and then the korban ola of the ram, and then the korban ola of the grain. And then you have the korban chatat of the bird and the korban chatat of the ram. I don't know if any of you other feel this way, but is it sacrilegious of me to say that some parshiot seem boring? I don't know.
What?
Truma.
Truma. Okay, so it's boring.
Truma.
Oh, okay.
No, not yet. You got nervous. You're ahead of yourself, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so today we're gonna do the Aron. And I want to read for you. So those of you who have Kli Yakar, it's worthwhile. I'll read it out loud because Kli Yakar says some incredibly beautiful things. But I'm just going to read you his introduction to these discussions. Then what we hope to do is discuss some of what goes on to understand what the Aron, how it was made. But more importantly, to understand some of the textual issues that come out from the Torah. And then to discuss some of the lessons that emanate from what the Torah is trying to say, and I'll explain to you why. So the Kli Yakar says the following. He says, look, if you want to look with me, the Kli Yakar is on Pasuk Yud, Aviasu Aron Atzei Shitim. If you have the Kli Yakar on Pasuk Yud, it's worthwhile. She has it. It's on top. Right there. It's in there. Taf Resh Chaf Aleph. Look on page Taf Resh Chaf Aleph in that version. What? No, it's okay. Rina, sit down. Okay, Taf Resh Chaf Aleph. See where it says Yud Ve'asu Aron Atzei Shitim? For those of you who want to follow along at home, that one does not have it. That's a Torah Tamima.
Yeah, I have it.
But you guys can share. You want to have a Kli Yakar?
No, I don't.
Sorry, you want to share with me? Okay, we're going to... You'll listen. So Kli Yakar says the following on Pasuk Yud.
It's not going to be in there.
Not going to be in there. Okay?
You want to look here.
Yeah. Okay, so see, you see where I am on the Ve'asu Aron? Because we're going to do a bunch of them. Vasu Aron, he says, "B'maaseh haMishkan, v'chol kelav v'dinei asiyatam, in the action of the construction of the Mishkan and all of its utensils and the laws, kvar nimtzu pirtei dinehem b'talmud alehem." So we find in their details and the discussion of them, and the hosif mimenu. And the Gra. There's nothing to add and nothing to take away. Meaning, like normally, it's very interesting. If you would look about the, let's say, Hilchot Shabbat. Right, how if you want to know in the Torah Shebel Peh, how much is there in the Torah Shebel Peh about Hilchot Shabbat? Tons. A ton. How much is in there in the Torah Shebechtav about Shabbat?
Very little.
Right, there's three psukim. Right, it's like Vesham Rav Nesel Shabbat and it's Lo Tivar Ruesh. That's it. But if you look in the Mishkan, how much is there in the Torah about the Mishkan?
A lot.
Tons. And it's repeated twice. You have all of Truma and Tetzaveh, about what you're supposed to do. Then you have this little break of Kitisa. And then you have all of Ayakel and Pekudeh about the fact that they did all of the things that were described, but what they were supposed to do. And it's all this detail. So like, what can you add? Says a Kli Yakar. He says, therefore, V'lo nishar lanu l'chadesh behem davar. There's nothing really to add. Ki'im b'mesh hiskimu alav kol mefarshim la'asot behem remazim al inyanam nisarim o niglim. So all we can do is what the mefarshim do. To add remazim, hints about the inyanim nistarim o niglim, hidden ideas or revealed. So I hate to break it to you, I don't know any of the hidden ones, so we're going to have to focus on the revealed ones. Ki lo yitachen lomar, it doesn't make sense to say, shekol pratim elu hayu below kavana, that these details were sort of random. Like, you know, why is it that this is half a cubit, that's one cubit? Oh, it's just random, whatever. No, 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 it doesn't work that way. There has to be a reason. V'al derech zeh halchu rov ha-mechabrim, la'asot behem remazim, ish lefi sachlo, zeh omer bako, v'zeh omer bako. So each one, each parshan follows his own explanation of why each thing is the way that it is. So that's the way you have to study, the Kedaka says, when you look at the Mishkan, you have to really delve into each individual detail and try to understand the details as they are and what you can learn from each individual detail. And he does that, and we're going to go into some of it in a little bit more depth. But I think it's just a very beautiful introduction to the understanding of the Mishkan. When you study the Mishkan, you really have to look at each detail. You can't, you know, just when you read the whole parsha, it's just like a blur. You know, the Aron is this big, and the Shulchan is that one, and you know, the Tzalot are that one. And it becomes sort of like, you know, when your contractor gives you all the contract of all the things that you have to worry about in your house. Does that sound familiar?
That's not a nice thing to
mention. Right. And at some point, your eyes just become bleary, and you say, whatever. You know, like, I hope it all comes out the way he said it would, and, you know, and whatever. But you can't read the Parsha that way, and you have to sort of spend time on it. So, you know, it used to be I was more afraid of these parshiyot when the shiur would come along, especially when I would give my parsha shiur in America, because of this reason. But the more you delve into it, the more you realize there's really a wealth of stuff there, and it's worthwhile to go into. So today we're going to study the Aron, and if we get to it, the Kaporet. But we're going to study it in really carefully, trying to look carefully at the words, and then ask some questions about the words, and then hopefully come to some explanation, some answers with Rashi's help, in addition with the Midrash and also with the Kli Yakar.
Before we go on this topic, I just had a question as to why, in your mind, that there might be so little on Shabbat and so much on the Mishkan.
I have an idea. I have a thought. The way it was explained to me or understood to me was, like, if you think about the way religion was always operated throughout history, right? The religion was very much in the hands of the practitioners of the religion. You know what I'm saying? Like, most people had no real concept or hands-on about their religion, and only the religious leaders would, A, tell you what to do, but they would be very controlling about the religiosity, if you know what I'm saying. Meaning, like, you know, controlling about the money and the finances and the priesthood, and, you know, they really held your life in balance. I don't know if anybody saw this. There was a news item about the fact that the Catholic Church was going to start reissuing, what were they called? Indulgences.
Really?
Yes. But it was not like the same way it used to be. An indulgence was, like it used to be, that like if you sinned or got the Pope mad or whatever, so you would buy an indulgence and he would like sell you a get-out-of-jail-free card. You know, that's what an indulgence was. But nowadays, they don't do that anymore, you know, but these indulgences are, like, you know, the Catholic Church can't ignore the fact that there is an official thing called an indulgence. So they're reissuing them, but you have to, like, you know, do good works or whatever. You get an indulgence. Like, right.
You get a kaparot.
Right.
Similar, but it's, like, much more specific. Like, you'll say, oh, my God, I just spoke Lashon Hara. So you call the rabbi and say, rabbi, I spoke Lashon Hara. You say, yeah, you know, give me $25 and you're off the hook. You know what I'm saying? Wouldn't it be nice if you could just pay your way out of anything? You know, whatever.
Nice for the rabbis.
What?
Nice for the rabbis.
Exactly. Exactly. No, that's exactly the point. That's exactly what happened in the Middle Ages. So if you think about it, it's very interesting. The things that are nogea to everyone, Hilchot Shabbat, we're very much in the control of the rabbanim, of the teachers, of the leaders. But the things that were, you would think that should be in their control, were much more spelled out. Like how a korban has to be. You know what I'm saying? It's very clear. There's much less for them to sort of, you know, say, no, this is the way we do it, and you have to kind of accept that. Right, exactly.
Shabbat was also a lot simpler, I think, 200 years ago. It wasn't like...
Why do you say that?
Because you had a fire, and you had to leave it. It wasn't like... Like, you didn't have so many different kinds of foods that you put on. Do I put it on the plata? Do I put it on Gabi Kadera? Do I, you know, is it a problem if I open up my refrigerator and then the timer goes off and stuff like that?
I'm not sure I agree with you, because they had their pots. I mean, it was a little more complicated in the fact that, like, for us, you leave it on and it's set and you don't have to touch it. With the Rabbanan, we're very much concerned with, like, oh, many of the Hilchot Shabbat are like, the fire is going out. You never have to worry about your fire going out. Your electricity, it's on, it's a steady, constant temperature, and you know definitively when you come home from Shul Shabbat morning, it will be at whatever temperature you wanted it to be at, however you set it. Imagine that.
I'm used to living in my house.
Imagine that, though. You put your soup on Friday night, and the log burned out. And your husband's going to come home, and the soup is going to be cold. So, like, there's a certain need in you to, like, you know, what can I do to keep it going or to cover it or whatever. You're like, there's, you know, so that the halachot had to deal with all that, you know, the complications or the confusions thereof. But I digress. So, turn to Pasuk Perek Hafei Pasuk Yud, chapter 25, verse 6, 10, sorry, Yud. Says the Torah, and this is the first kli, the first vessel in the Midrash. Ve'asu aron atzei shitim. I have to turn to three pages. Ve'asu aron atzei shitim. Amatayim v'chetzi arko. Ve'ama v'chetzi rachbo. Ve'ama v'chetzi komato. And you shall make the aron of atzei shitim. Atzei shitim are acacia wood, or some kind of wood. We're not entirely sure what they are. It's shitim wood. Others say it's some kind of cedar wood, atzei shitim. Which had the cedar acacia wood. You can look it up if you want in Wikipedia. Okay. 2.5 amot length, an amma and a half width, and an amma and a half high. So if you'd ask yourself, how big was the aron?
Not very.
Not very. So 2.5. 2.5.
Even less than that.
No, 2.5 is about, an amma is 8.5.
Maybe till here.
No, more, I think about there. An amma and a half wide. And I'm going to have tall. Right? That's the whole thing. You know what I'm saying? You have this idea of, it's very interesting.
All the pictures.
What?
Like all the pictures. I know it sounds funny. Like whenever it's like...
Oh, sure. We have that book somewhere. I think we even have two of them.
From Machon HaMikdash?
Yeah. What?
The one from Machon HaMikdash?
No, we have the old one. With the pictures, the tabernacle. Right? Yeah, you have the idea of the pictures in your... Right. What?
Do you want me to get it?
Not yet. Not yet. I like the idea of imagining it before. You have the art school? They show you the pictures? Yeah, they do. Right. It's very interesting. Okay. Let's read on and then we'll go back. But tzipitao to zahav tahor, mibayit umichutz titzapenu, and you shall cover it with pure gold. Inside and outside you shall cover it. Ve'asita alav zer zahav saviv, and you shall make upon it a zer zahav, a golden zer. What is a zer? What do you have?
Esther words.
A zer?
When you sing the song, Achad Shem Shalosh Ami Achad Shverot, the Esther phrase is
zer zahav
yishli, right?
Really?
Yeah.
Is there the word zer appear in the Tanakh?
And on a birthday, the Hayom Yom Huledet, Chag Lo Sameach, v'zer lo pareach. Zer is the crown of flowers.
There you go. Okay. Fine.
Thank you.
Well done. Would you like to give us
another early childhood?
Would you like to give us another example where Zer? I never knew those words. Like that, da 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 da
da
da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da
Is that we're teaching it to our children incorrectly?
Yeah, right. La, 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 la. Okay. Fine. Zer zahav saviv, a crown. Very interesting word. We'll get back to that. V'yatzakta lo arba tab'ot zahav, and you shall mold for it, yatzakta, you know, to form, fashion, four rings. V'natata al arba pa'amotav, and you shall place it on its four, what is a pa'amotav? So without the English.
Bells.
Pa'amon is bell. Pa'am, pa'am.
Pa'am is a time.
It's an interesting word. Isn't it an interesting word?
I would assume it's the corner.
Yes, right. Uncle says zaviate, the corners. It's an interesting question. Why does it word the word pa'am? Right, pa'am. Pa'amot. Pa'amot. Anyway. Ushtei taba'ot, two rings, al tzal'o ha'echat, on its tzela. What is it, tzela?
Rib.
Well, that's it. Why do you say rib?
Here, inside.
Correct. But how do you know Adam was a rib?
Because art school says so.
Correct. Right. It goes back. It's very interesting that it uses the same language. I want to point it out to you. Something that you notice as you listen to the Torah reading on Shabbat, right? That you'll notice there's a lot of... Yeah, I said that on purpose. There's a lot of human imagery in the Mishkan. A tremendous amount of human imagery construction that the Mishkan is almost like parts of a body. Mishkan seems like a living, breathing thing in a sense. Okay, and two rings on the other tzela, What?
Side.
Okay. Where do you think the rings were placed? So if this is my box, where? Just tell me exactly where on my box.
One name.
No, there's four rings. What I'm asking you is where, which side would you put the rings on?
The length.
Yeah.
You put the rings here and here.
Yeah.
Right?
On the side.
So that you could.
That they would, oh, I guess it's on the corner. It's on the yokes.
What?
It's on the zavit of it.
It's on the corner, but it's got to be on the side. It's not going to be on the actual corner. Mm-hmm. Meaning, here's your rod. Where would you put the ring here, or would you put the ring here?
On the length.
On the length.
Tammy,
you put it on this way.
Yeah.
To carry it that way.
Yeah.
Right, well, it's Rashi says it went this way. Oh, the rings went, yeah. Meaning
so
lengthwise.
To its width.
Right.
And you needed a wider door to get it out.
Yes, you need a wider door. They carried it widthwise or lengthwise.
Which would take fewer people to carry it, I would think.
Would it?
Yes, because
why carry
I would think
out?
So. I don't know, but it's still the same amount of weight.
The same amount of weight. It's very interesting. I was thinking about this morning. Let's finish up about the iron and we'll
so
see.
You carry a piano into a room. You don't carry it from the longer side. You carry it from the shorter side.
But you carry it. What's that? But you carry it. You carry it lengthwise.
No, but you have the rings. You would carry if you would go on the short end. The next person would go on the other short end, and you take it in.
It's less stress.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but the way. But here, the poles.
Yeah.
Are extending.
Very long, extend.
How many people are carrying it?
But if they were on the long side, they would be even longer.
How many people are carrying it?
Less amount of people. If you had it on this side, you'd have a lot of people on this side.
It doesn't have it on
this
here.
This is easier
only
for have less. Fewer people to.
How many people are carrying this?
How heavy is it?
Four.
Well, it's a wooden box covered in
gold,
right, with a cover of cherub Kruvim made of solid gold.
With rocks inside.
With rocks inside.
Somebody lifting I went to Ballarat recently and they melted a whole bar of gold. And one person.
Where did you go?
Ballarat in Australia.
Okay.
Mining village.
Cool.
And melted this much gold.
Yeah.
And he could barely lift up the bar.
Right.
And that was like one person with a little bit of gold.
Right.
It's really heavy.
Correct. Right.
But the iron carried itself.
How do you know that? From the Midrash says? No, but he touched it. Because he actually touched the iron. Remember, it was falling, and he touched it, not the rods. You're clearly allowed to touch the rods.
Right.
You're not allowed to touch the iron. All right. These are. It's an interesting question when you start thinking about it. Well, how is it made? Where were the poles? Why were the poles that way? Let's look at Rashi for a second. Okay, one second. Look at Rashi on Pa'amotav. Rashi says, "Kitargumo zivyate." Right, like if y'all saw in the Targum, zivyate. It's corners. If anybody, by the way, there's an English Rashi here. If you need with the vowels. Right, if anybody would be helpful for you, I specifically brought that one. What?
Oh, so yeah, you picked this one.
Yeah. Okay. So there's if you look at Rashi on Pasuk, I'm on Pasuk, what am I on? Chav paper, Chav Pei, Pasuk Yud Bet, 12. That's why it's there. Okay. Ubizavit hel yonah, samuch la kaporet hayunitunim. It was on the upper corner, near the kaporet, near the cover. So if you look at the upper corner near the kaporet, shtayim mikan, two rings on one side, two rings on the other side, lirachvo shel aharon, right, and they were on the rochav. Rochav means the width of the aharon. So this is the aharon. Can I use a pencil for a second? Right. So the rings were 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, on the width. Uvehabadim nitunim behem, and the poles were stuck in them. The arko shel aron mafsik ben hamadim. Rashi is very, very clear. And the length of the aron interrupted between the two poles. Okay, so we have pole here. It's good enough. You can imagine. Why? Amatayim vachetzi ben bad leban. So 2.5 amot between each bad. Shiyu shnei bnei adam. Hanosim et haron mehalchim beinehem. How many people carry the aron?
Two.
The two people who carried the aron walked between them.
Between what?
Between the two poles.
But that also doesn't
that makes no
ah,
sense.
The one in front and one in back.
Right.
But it's too
and
wide.
They
held their arms
up. Interesting. I thought about that exactly today.
What?
Right? There was two people held it, and there's no way for any person to carry the arm on their
so
shoulders. There's no physical
the
way.
Angle.
You either have to hold it like this, or you have to hold it like this.
Wow.
That's so cool.
Right? So it was clear that it was designed in such a way that it could not be carried on your shoulders.
Mm. Could not be carried by people.
No, it could be carried by people. You can imagine.
People.
Could have, what?
No, but I mean, it cannot be carried by the amount of people who carried it.
But then as you
know, right.
It says
the arm carried itself. Right. The Midrash says the arm carried itself. And maybe the Midrash says the arm carried itself. Because there's no way you could pick up the arm. Also very interesting, like I would think how many people should carry such a thing?
Four
people. It's perfect for four people. One on one shoulder, one on another shoulder.
To have them to begin with.
What?
If people couldn't carry them, what was the point of having
them? Isn't that an excellent question? That's an excellent, excellent question. We're going to find in the Aron, there are a lot of fascinating aspects of the Aron, which are impossible, but happened anyway. Right? It was impossible to carry, so why would people carry it? It's an excellent question. I think the answer almost answers itself. I have an answer for you. What would you say the answer to that is? Think about what the Aron represents.
In what?
No. Not just God's presence. What does the Aron itself represent? This is an easy one. What does the Aron itself represent?
You're doing with the body part?
No. What is the Aron itself doesn't have to be represented.
The Aron
what's it holding?
The connection between God and the Jewish people.
You're going too deep here. The laws, the Torah. The Torah.
Okay.
Right? The Aron is the Torah. Okay? It's a very simple concept and a very deep one as well. Right? Is any one person capable of studying, understanding, maintaining, lifting the whole Torah?
No.
Yet? Moshe, meaning Kadosh Baruch Hu gave Torah to mankind, even though the Torah in and of itself is beyond any of us, and beyond all of us in a sense, nonetheless, he gave it to us to carry. And it's ours. The Ribbono Shel Olam in Matan Torah, it was Matan Torah. Shar Natan Lanu Torat Emet. This is a very fundamental idea in Judaism, that Ribbono Shel Olam gave it to us. It's not like he said, here, read it. He gave it to us. He told us, guard it, you know, promote it, teach it. I wouldn't say add to it, but it's
manipulate it.
What?
Manipulate it.
Form it. Right. It's your Torah. I mean, is it our Torah? Can we really understand it? Can we really appreciate it? In many ways, no. It's beyond all of us. It's too heavy for any of us to understand and appreciate. And yet, carry it we do nonetheless. Right? There's that conundrum, that impossibility of saying to us, carry something that's just beyond you. You know, and I think that your question is such a beautiful question because it almost answers itself. Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know, how did he give us the Torah? How is it possible that he gave us this divine manifestation of Hashem's will and told us it's yours? And the answer is, it's impossible. And yet, this is exactly what he did, and that's what we try to do. We try to carry this Torah, we try to lift this Aron,
and try to carry this Torah. In reality, we can't really carry it.
We can't really physically do it. So how do we do it?
So he helps us.
Correct.
Just like when we do a mitzvah,
he carries us.
That's right.
You know, sometimes it seems impossible, but we start and he helps us.
Beautiful. Absolutely correct. You know what I'm saying? But it's all in these. In this imagery is in the Mishkan. You know, it's there. It's all there. Okay. Private caller. Okay. So let's read on a little bit. Pasuk Yugimah. We haven't really even gotten into the language. V'asita badei atzei shitim. V'tzipitao tam zahav. You should make badim. What are badim?
Poles.
Good. Of atzei shitim, of wood, and cover them with gold. Yudal beheveita et habadim bataba'ot al tzal'ot ha'aron laseit et ha'aron behem. And you shall bring these poles into the rings on the corners, on the sides of the Aron, to carry the Aron with them. Tetvav, b'tabot ha'aron yihyu ha'badim, in these rings of the Aron, these poles shall be, lo yasuru mimenu. Right, you can never take them off. Right, so the poles, It's fascinating. The poles are not just a means of transportation. You would think, okay, right? Right, this is like a very nice, convenient little feature of the Aron, very well designed. It's a traveling Aron, right? You know, and when you travel, you put on the poles, and when you don't travel, you take off the poles. No. The poles are an essential aspect of the Aron. They don't come off. V'natata el ha'aron et ha'idut asher etein elecha. And you should put into the Aron, to the Aron. V'natata. Well, what should you say?
V'natata.
Right, right. V'natata el ha'aron, you put to the Aron. Et ha'idut asher etein elecha.
Giving it to the Aron.
In a sense. Yeah, the Aron is.
And then the Aron's going to take it.
The Aron is
alive.
The Aron does.
What is Edut?
The Edut? Edut means a testimony, right? A testimony.
What does
that mean?
The Luchot
HaEdut. Sounds like it, doesn't it? The testimony that I give to you.
There are a few things that. 1 minute. There are a few things that are called Edut that are in the Aron.
What is the Mishkan called?
Mishkan HaEdut, but the.
The Mishkan is called the Ohel. Ohel?
It's called the Mishkan HaEdut also.
It's called the Ohel Moed.
Oh,
Ohel Moed.
So okay. Moed doesn't necessarily
mean. Moed is the tent of meeting. Moed is an agreed time.
Right, so
an appointment.
Same.
Could be.
Is it?
Same root, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Va'ad. Edut. Va'ad. Aid. Testimony. Yes.
What are the poles? Arms and legs? You're saying
no, the poles are to carry.
No, but you're saying like...
Oh, I didn't finish that. I want to make a point. It's interesting. I also wanted to say about the poles that the idea is, like, there's a huge difference between carrying something in your hands and carrying something on your shoulders. The difference being, if you've ever tried to carry something in your hands, when you carry it on your hands, it requires constant physical energy, vigilance, in a sense. Mm. Right? When you put something on your shoulders...
It's the weight. It's
you rest. You allow it to rest. And so clearly the Aron was designed in such a way that whoever was carrying it had to be consistently, constantly holding on to it. As opposed to if you let it rest on your shoulders, you sort of...
And it would be evident there's absolutely no way anybody could do that.
Nobody I know is 2.5 amot wide. You know what I'm saying? How would... Think about it. If you only 2 people are allowed to carry it and they're carrying it like this... What? Rashi says that that's what they had. 2 people. Rashi says, based on the Gemara Menachot, that 2 people carried it. You know, it's just a fascinating idea. You could not have 2 people carrying something with 4 corners without it falling. Where would you put the 2 people? 3 they could do.
Right.
But 2 you couldn't. Which means they had to carry it in their hands. Which is a very beautiful idea also in the Aron of the Torah. Right? We're going to come back to this pasuk. We call it Eitz Chaim Hi. Machazikim Ba'or. It's Machazik. You have to hold on to it in order to carry it. Right? You can't, like, you know, be a pillar for it or let it rest on you. In order for the Torah to be there, in order to the carrying of the Aron requires energy, requires effort. It doesn't happen by itself. And what happens, and you're not allowed to, in a sense, there's an Isur, you're not allowed to rest it on your shoulders. And I never thought about that until I really looked at it carefully. Okay, let's go back to Pasuk Yud, and we'll look a little more deeply, and then we'll ask some questions, and then we'll use Rashi and Kli Yakar and maybe others to answer the questions.
Can
yes,
you
can.
You said it's asur to put it on their shoulders?
I don't know if it was asur. That's a good question. I think it was impossible.
Well, because if...
How would they?
Because if you had two... If you had a thing here and a thing here, if one put it on his shoulder here, one put it on his shoulder here, probably wouldn't fall if there's something holding on to it.
If what?
If there's... There are rings sticking out.
Yeah.
Right? The poles are attached like this and like this. One person held it over here, but it was still holding by a pole over here, and one person over here.
But you'd have
to
like
be able to balance it.
You're asking a lot. Yeah, you're. I mean, that's like.
Yeah.
If you were carrying the Aron and you knew that if you dropped it, you were dead. You know, like, yeah, right. maybe not. You know.
You said no one could hold from here to there. No one would be that much.
On their shoulders.
On your shoulders.
Oh, on the shoulders.
I don't know anybody 5 feet, literally 5 feet or 4 feet that wide. Right. You know, it's just an interesting fact that you know, I always, if you in your mind, you always thought that the poles went the other way. And you realize the poles didn't go that way. Okay. The Asu Aron at Seishitim, Pasuk Yod. So what do you notice right away that all of the Mefarshim notice and comment on?
Where did they get trees from in the desert?
Oh, that's not what I noticed, but it's a very good question.
I keep saying it.
At the Shittim appear all the time. And this is a very, very famous, very, very, very famous midrash. That's worthwhile to note. Mila, you want to share with me, or should I learn? Go read it. Okay. It's one of our favorite midrashim. Let me turn to the midrash book. Very, very worthwhile to get. It says the midrash the following. It's on here, isn't it? Here we are. Midrash says the following. Where in the world did they get Atzei Shittim from?
They took it out of
Mishra. Ah, excellent. Right. Where am I?
I think Rashi.
Is it in Rashi?
Ibn Ezra even says it.
Ibn Ezra says it. I don't know if it's here or it's later on. So the Midrash says, I'll just tell you outside because I can't find it inside right this second. The Midrash says in a much more powerful way that Yaakov Avinu saw with Ruach HaKodesh that when the Bnei Yisrael went out of Mitzrayim, that they would need materials for the Mishkan. So therefore, what he did was, when he went down from Eretz Yisrael to Mitzrayim, he took with him some saplings, some little plants. And he told his children to plant these plants in Egypt. That when they would come, leave Egypt, they should cut down those trees and bring them with them on the trip out of Egypt for construction of a Mishkan in the desert. And that's where they got, you know, so the Midrash is much more powerful. It's not just that Yaakov foresaw the need, but they took trees from Eretz Yisrael, planted them in Mitzrayim, cut them down in Mitzrayim, and used them to construct the Mishkan in the desert. Well, the idea, clearly the Midrash, the notion is one of Yaakov's Ruach HaKodesh, but secondly, right, that the essence of the Mishkan began in Eretz Yisrael. It's also interesting, if you really look at the Midrash deeply, I wonder where the origin was, that these trees began in Eretz Yisrael, but grew in Mitzrayim. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's a lot of that, you know, we like that too, right? You know, that the generation of the redemption or of the Gilui Shechina, the revelation of the Shechina, right? A lot of that growth happens in Egypt. You cut it down, and that's the essence of the Aron that remains to this day. It was never replaced. Right? The Aron. Right? The Aron of the Luchot, which is somewhere in the basement of the Vatican or in some catacomb like of some tunnel that they have yet to discover somewhere, right? That the Kohanim is somewhere deep down. They're going to find it. It was these trees that grew in Egypt. There's no American, you know, or Israeli trees. That is the Aron. And that never changes. And I think that's a very beautiful idea. I was thinking more linguistically. If you'll notice, look at the verbs in the Pasuk. And there's a contradiction or almost a clash between the conjugation of the verbs in one Pasuk, in Pasuk Yud.
There's only one verb.
Oh, sorry, Yud and Yudalas. Good point. Yeah, thank you.
Well,
you're going to be technical. Right, right. It says, V'asu aron asei shitim, and V'asu, atem, you and they. And then, Pasuk Yud Aleph, V'tzipita otam zahav tohor. Okay? What now, if you have to look on and look for a few more. Right. One is?
Singular.
Right. In biblical Hebrew, just so you know, it's always the vav, this vav ha-hipuch, ve'asu is, and you shall do. Right, meaning, you know, it's like Vayomer is always backwards. Right? And he said, the Vav turns the Yomer of future into past. So here it's Ve'asu, and they did, but you shall do.
Okay, you've totally
lost
me there.
What?
How about you?
Okay. Right, whatever. Just take my word for it. Do you follow the fact that one of them is in plural and one of them is in singular?
No.
Right, Ve'asu. Right. In general, by the way, you'll notice, in general...
You get the future, the past and the future, but the Vayomer thing, I don't...
Vayomer, Yomar, what is Yomar? Is that past or future?
Future.
Right. What's Vayomer?
In past.
And he said, the Vav takes the future tense and flips it around. Why? Can't tell you, but just... That's what it is. Pretend you're in Upan. Just accept it. Right. It's biblical Hebrew. Okay. So, but if you look on, it's always in the, which is it? Is it in when Hashem says to Moshe, is it in the plural or is it in the singular? It's always in the singular. Ve'asita Aron, and you shall do ve'asita, ve'asita. So this is out of the ordinary. In the Aron specifically, it's always ve'asu. Okay, so the Midrash immediately. Right, but that's a general broad. But now when it comes to. Correct, but when it comes to the. See, look, just skip for a little bit. Look at Pasuk Chav Gimel. Skip to verse 23. Okay? When it comes to the Shulchan. Verse 23, what does it say? Vasita. Skip to Pasuk Lamed Aleph for the menorah. Vasita menorah, right? It's Vasita. On and on, you'll see it's always Vasita. Always singular to Moshe, except for the Aaron. Okay, so why? That's obviously the question. And so the Midrash is going to come up with answers,
well,
which are.
It looks like he's giving it. He wants it for an individual, not for.
Well, each example is Moshe's. I mean, Moshe's in charge. So Hashem says to Moshe, "You should make." And Moshe goes and delegates. But in this example, why does Hashem command Moshe specifically in the plural, "And you shall make all of you," as opposed to the individual? Says the Midrash, a very beautiful idea, which I think is rather intuitive. Says the following: Midrash says, "Midnei ma." Why? Our question, why does it say V'asita for everything else? And here it says V'asu. Amar Rabbi Yehuda bar Rabbi Shalom. Says Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Shalom. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says God to Moshe. Yavo HaKol V'yasku Ba'aron. Everyone should come and engage in the construction of the Aron. Kedei Sheyizku Kulam LaTorah. That everyone should have a merit in the Torah. Right, I mean, it's understood. Like the Aaron is the job of the Kohen to light, and the Shulchan, the Kohanim, and this person, and that, whatever. When it comes to the Torah, there is no you. There's only collective you. And I'll read you another one. Davar Acher. This is in a little bit of a different formulation. Tziva Kadosh Baruch Hu l'chol Yisrael la'asoto. God commanded all of Israel to make it. Shelo yihye le'echad mehem pitchon pe alcha ve'ro. That no one person should have pitchon peh means something to say against his friend. To say, lomar, listen to this. Ani natati harbe la'aron. I paid more. I gave the aron. Therefore, lefikach ani lo made harbe. Va'ani yesh li bo yoter mimcha. Va'ata lo natata ba'aron klum. Lefikach en lecha chelek ba'torah. No one should be able to say, it is the Saban Memorial Aaron. You know what I'm saying?
Feel good.
What?
That then also, like,
oh, are you kidding? You're like, everyone likes to think of when the third Beit HaMikdash is built, it's going to be like the Goldstein Memorial Pavilion. You know, and by the way, if you think that it's like that way, there were
maybe the Madoff Memorial.
The Madoff Memorial. Oh, God, can you imagine? You're like, what? Oh, every shul, but I'm saying the Beit HaMikdash. You think? Can you imagine walking the Beit HaMikdash?
That's a long way.
Yes.
It's not new at all.
There is a gate in the Beit HaMikdash called Sha'arei Nikanor. You know why they're called Sha'arei Nikanor?
Because
Nikanor paid for the doors. That's exactly right. Right.
You go to all
the many of the mosaics in the Galil.
It's there. I think it's on. It's in Bayakia.
I pay for light switch.
Wow. I don't remember. Yeah, that's a little bit more the pshat.
Of Asu?
The whole first nine sukkim is about taking a truma.
Mm-hmm.
So then, obviously, you know, when you open up, okay, everyone give money, and then it can't just be going to single. Like, if it would go to singular, it would look like, well, hey, what did I just pay for?
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be the Asu to make everyone feel inclusive.
Well, you think, there was no equal amounts in this case. In the donations of the Mishkan, there was more and there was less. I mean, the only time, there's one instance where everybody gives. Ma'aser Shekel was for the maintenance, and no, the Ma'aser Shekel was for the upkeep, meaning for the, like the Arnona in a sense, that it was like, you know, the ongoing payment in order to maintain for the Korbanot, right? Yes. Right, but that was equal, but for the Truma, it was Kol Medid Libo. Whatever you want to give, you can give. Right, so a lot of people, some gave more. What?
So therefore, it really had to say that.
Some gave more, some gave less. Uh-huh. Right? Let's look, I saw, I think it was... Look, if you have Ramban... What? What do you mean? I think it was not the husband's fault. It was whoever stole more from the Egyptians in Egypt. You know what I'm saying? Okay, those of you who have Ramban, if you look at Ramban on Yud, the Ramban refers to this. Okay, it's worthwhile to take a look. Ramban echoes this idea. Ramban, v'yitachen. It's on Tuf Resh Yud Zayin in that version. Tuf Resh Yud Zayin. If you look in the second column for you, for those of you looking at home, second column in the Ramban. Just skip to the second column. Okay, look at the second line, the last word in the line, v'yitachen. Okay, v'yitachen. It makes sense. Sheyirmos shehiyu kol Yisrael mishtatfin ba'asiyat ha'aron. This hints, this alludes to the fact that all of Israel participates in the making of the Aaron. Ba'avur shehu kadosh mishichnei elyon. Right? Because it is exalted, it is extremely holy. V'sheyizku kulam ba'torah. And that everyone should merit in the Torah. And then he quotes the Midrash. I'm going to skip in a second. Skip to three lines from the bottom. V'ha'asek. And practically, how did it have a manifestation? Sheitnadev kol achad kli zahav achad la'aron. That when they took the money, they said, they took it equally, they said, this is for the Aaron. Everyone give an earring. Like, everyone give a little. Or, Oshiyazul b'tzalel eze ma'at. Everyone had to participate in the construction of the Aaron. Oshiyachavnu ledavar. Meaning, they're physically, practically, everyone had to participate in the construction of the Aaron. That Hashem did not want anyone to be able to say, this is my Aaron. You know, this is like, I dedicated the Aaron, it's my Aaron, I paid for it, it's my Torah. Doesn't work that way. The Torah belongs to everyone equally. I think that's a very, very, very powerful and beautiful thing that's explicit in the language from the first word, ve'asu. It's everyone, all of you. Okay? Next word, aron atzei shitim. Okay? So if you think about the construction of the aron, so how is it made? So let's read on a little bit. Amatayim v'cheti amarko, v'ama v'cheti komato, where are we? V'ama v'cheti rachbo, v'ama v'cheti komato. 2.5 by 1.5 by 1.5. So what do you notice about the measurements immediately? Lots of halves. Okay? Why don't you say, like, okay, you could make it like 4, 5 by 3 by 3. Like, why specifically 1.5 by 1.5 by 2.5? Yeah, go ahead. I don't know. You don't know? So the Midrash says, quite clearly, another beautiful idea. The Midrash says, 1 second. Yeah, go ahead. You know what the Balaturim is? No, Balaturim is always a compilation of the Turim, Balaturim of the Midrash. It's really Midrashim. Go ahead, what does it say? Explain.
He has to break and lower himself.
Right. So I think I saw a Midrash. 1 second. Here. Okay. Right? It says, similar to the idea, Shatamid Chacham, yeah, Shafal, he should be low, Ve'anav, and humble, V'libo, Nishbar, Bekirbo. Okay, and his heart should be broken. But I think it's even more of an idea that when a person studies the Torah, there should never be a sense of completion. Right? That the measurements are always in sense of halves. Why? Because, you know, like, you shouldn't think, oh, I'm done. Right? I did the Aaron last year. Didn't we learn this parsha like, you know, a year ago? Like, there's nothing new to add. So the idea is that a person should always feel that there's more to add.
Come back next year.
Right? There's always something new. Okay. So that's just a nice idea in the halves. I don't think I have time for it, but the Kli Yakar has just a beautiful, beautiful idea about why the Aaron was all halves. You know, he mentions a note that the Aaron was all halves. The Mizbeach was, let me see if I can find it here. The Mizbeach was
half-halves?
Some halves and some holes. It's the Mizbeach, the Aaron, and the Shulchan. One of them was holes, one of them was partials, and the Aaron was all halves.
Where's,
I don't remember
the
which.
Without the Torah?
That's clear. Right. But it's not a corny thing. I mean, it's all, what's that?
The Shulchan is half and half.
Right, and then the Mizbeach, Hazahav, is the Mizbeach is holes. You know what I'm saying? Okay. There's a very interesting. Let's read on in the Aaron. You figure out which one it was. Then the Torah says very interestingly, Yud Aleph v'tipita oto zahav tahor mibayit umichutz tetzapen. You should cover it in pure gold, outside and inside. V'asita alav zer zahav savit, and you should make it on it. Remember that crown of the zer zahav. Okay. So if you look at this box, what does it look like?
Gold.
It's a gold box, except.
It has a little crown on the top.
Except.
It's not really gold.
It's wood.
It's wood. Right. So that in and of itself is a contradiction in terms. Now, this wasn't like, you know, it wasn't a money-saving operation here, right? And we clearly weren't looking to save on the weight.
I don't think that you could. I think that the support that gold, pure gold would have, I don't think you could make a box like that out of pure gold without the wood inside.
Why?
You can't make a menorah out of 100% pure gold with one piece either, in the dimensions that it's given in the Torah.
Because
you could. Why?
Yeah, they tried. They couldn't do it.
No, they physically couldn't do it No, it wasn't the thinness. It was the complication. The Midrash says that it was so intricate and so ornate. They were not able to.
No, Machon HaMikdash tried it, and they couldn't do it.
They had that much gold. They had that much gold.
They did it to
scale. They had that much gold. I've seen that thing. That's real gold.
Yes.
Not the whole thing.
Yes.
No way.
That's why it's covered in that box, and there are like. There aren't showroom.
Little bullets put in there if you open it.
It's very protected. It's gold.
Really?
The whole shebang?
Yes.
It's gold.
What are they going to do when they pull out the old one?
What's the same with
you? Should just know, by the way. Right. You should just know, by the way, that the Navi says in Malachim that there were 10 menorot in the Beit HaMikdash.
What?
There are 12. Oh, clearly. There were 10 or 12 in a row in the Beit HaMikdash.
So it's only one of them that's in the Vatican?
Oh. Who knows? Yeah, they had many more.
So meaning the Mishkan had one and the Beit HaMikdash had multiple.
Multiple. Right, a menorah.
Because
it was bigger.
You know what I'm saying? No, but the menorah that they lit.
Yeah. They had 10. They used 10 in the Beit HaMikdash.
It was like spread out all over.
No, like they were all lined up. If you look at the pictures, they were all lined up.
That's also a picture of the differences between one and...
Right. I mean, there's a book. There are a few excellent books about if you look at the pictures of the Beit HaMikdash.
Why? Why would they need 10? Why?
Shlomo wanted 10. He didn't want one. It was a big room. They needed light. Anyway, so that's gold. So they physically couldn't make it?
This is what my students told me. They went on a trip on the tour of the Machon HaMikdash.
Uh-huh.
And they said that they couldn't make it in the dimensions that they're described in the Torah. That they physically were not able to do it with the gold because it kept bending. The whole thing
wouldn't stand up.
It was too top heavy. Yeah.
Okay.
And so they couldn't do it they did it to scale, but they couldn't do it to actual size.
So they made it smaller?
Yeah.
But that small version
is scale.
Wow. So that's not even the right size. That's so big.
Another physical impossibility. Interesting. Fascinating. Maybe the gold was different. Pure gold? They use
you mean maybe the chemical makeup of gold is different than
that? No. What's that? Right. Well, no, they can't use it. It's pure gold.
But that's the point. Here, this is the half-shekel.
So that's what you're saying about gold.
Also,
right.
You can't just have a box of pure gold.
Because it would not hold anything. Right. Gold is pliable. It's very interesting. Gold is a... Right. It's a pliable metal. If you want to take off your earring or her earrings and bite into them,
it would.
Yeah. Right. You would...
That's why I have gold rings and everything. I've always got another alloy
Right. Uh-huh. Very nice. Okay. So it's...
Could it have something about your question here about the eight and the gold? Could it have something to do with certain physical objects can contain impurity and is it connected with that?
Why? Very beautiful. Yes. So, yes. Mm-hmm. Right. And absolutely. So it is interesting to note that it was... I mean, the Rashi, there's a machloket about how it was covered. Okay, do you know the most people, you know the famous explanation of most Mefarshim that we explain? That there were actually three boxes. They constructed three boxes. There was the wood box. They constructed a slightly smaller gold box that they placed inside the wood box. And a slightly smaller gold, slightly larger gold box that they placed on the outside. So it was actually a box in a box in a box. And then a strip of gold on the top. So it wasn't just a covering, it was boxes inside of boxes. You know, there's very interesting construction in that way. And we'll discuss that in a minute. But it had to be that there was wood on the... What do you mean?
How did the whole of the Torah fit in?
It wasn't a Torah, it was the Luchot.
I know, but how did it fit in?
How big were the Luchot?
A box and a box and a box.
No, but it was like very, very fine boxes of gold.
Are these dimensions the inside dimensions or the outside dimensions?
The Ibn Ezra says it's a machloket. Whether it's the inside or the outside dimensions of the box. But nonetheless, I mean, even so, how big are the luchot? The luchot are not like these huge tablets that you think.
6x6x3 tefachim, mm-hmm. and every amma is 6 tefachim. So after you put both luchot next to each other,
exactly fit.
It's still, I think, like you said, what's the word? Not a kether, a kotel.
A small space.
whole,
like, but if you think about this poor box, like whoever had to carry these things, it's literally, you fill this box, fill it with solid rock. You know what I'm saying? Okay, good luck.
And the box,
how can it be exactly, because it's supposed to have the
shivrei. Shivrei were not inside, they were like on the side. And there was also a Sefer Torah, like on the bottom. I'm not entirely
according
sure.
To Rashi, that Moshe put the Torah that he wrote also into the...
Wasn't it like they added, there was definitely like a shelf. Wasn't there like a shelf on the outside also, somewhere on it? And like, you know, some carpenter like tacked on. Not in the Aron, not in the Aron? I don't know. By the way, there was more than one Aron, clearly.
Right,
there was definitely more than an Aron as well. Okay, anyway, so what about, I want to talk about the wood for a second. Okay, why did they have wood if you were just going to cover it? And the idea is, a very beautiful idea, that you can't have anything made of only gold. Like wood symbolizes life, growth, but also, what's that? Eitz, it symbolizes stability. You know, we all know what happens to people who are inside and out only gold. I mean, what does gold represent? Very beautiful, but completely external. Right? Without any eitz in the middle. Without any substance. You know, and you can't have that because it doesn't last. It doesn't really produce anything. You know, and if all you have is the gold through and through, like you said, it will wither away in a sense. It won't last. Okay. Look at Kli Yakar from Basu Aron on page Tuf Resh Chaf Gimel Kli Yakar.
The man was outside.
It was in front of the Aron. Okay, Tuf Resh Chaf Gimel. If you have the Kli Yakar, for those of you who have it, follow in time. Okay, it says the following. If you skip two lines down, Basu Aron. Masha Amar. He repeats this midrash. Bekulam Basita Vakame Amar Basu. Why does it normally say and they shall make or all plural? Right now it's singular. Amar Hatara Kol Yavo Vitasku BeAron Kadeshia Kulam Chelak BeTorah Ki Keter Torah Hefker LaKol. This is very beautifully. The crown of the Torah is anyone's. Hefker. Anyone who wants it can take it. Devar Acher Lefi Shneamar Eitz Chayim Hi LaMachazikim Ba. Okay, it is an Eitz Chayim for those who machazikim ba. LeLomdeha Lo Neemar. Doesn't say Eitz Chaim Hi to those who learn it. Ela lemachazikim ba, for those who uphold it. Remez lemachazikim yidei lomdei Torah, for those who support those who learn Torah. Mechol adam uviyot shelo kol adam uchan lilmo Torah. He said, let's be honest. Not everybody can learn. Not everybody's ready to learn. Umikol makom yesh tzad bechol adam. But everyone can have a part in the Torah. Even if he's not learning, he can support the people who learn it. Right? Therefore it says, ve'asu aron atzei shitim. That's why it says, why does it say atzei shitim? Ki mitzad heyot ve'aron ha'etz. Because in the Aron is the Eitz, Hamramez al ki Eitz Chayim hi lemachazikim ba. The Eitz symbolizes the Eitz Chayim, the life, the tree of life, those who support it. Al kein hakol yecholim laasota. Therefore, everybody can make it. Meaning, not everybody's got gold, but everybody's got wood. Wood is common to everyone. Okay. Skip on. Let's skip to the next paragraph. The Achar Kach Amar, and then it says v'tzipita otam. You cover it on the outside and the inside. When it comes to the atzei shitim, these shitim, these cedar wood, the acacia wood, but when it comes to the covering, it says in singular. Why? Anybody can make the aron of wood. But not everybody can understand the revealed and the hidden, the secrets of the Torah. Okay, so the gold represents the flashiness and the fanciness and the inside and the outside and the hidden, the revealed. Not everybody can do that. But the eighth, the wood, that's common. Anybody can do that. And that everyone should have a feel that they should have a part in this supporting of the Torah. I mean, you know, you could take his editorial message in the way you want to, but I think that there's a lot of value in that. David and I were actually having this long discussion this week about, you know, because I gave the doctor thing, and he actually thought of it in terms of a broader discussion of this notion of not everybody, you know, manifests themselves in a spiritual way, like that they can have this, but a person's construction in the world, a person's place in the world might be to become a doctor. So I asked him, well, who's to say that your fulfillment in the world is necessarily become a doctor? Maybe your fulfillment of the world would be better if you were, like, you know, a plumber, but you learned more and you did less work. And he was arguing the other way around, that no, that your contribution to the world might be through medicine. Your contribution to the world might be through whatever it is you want to do, which I actually agree with him. I was just arguing with him because I like to do that. You know, but there's this notion that, you know, there's the haves and the have-nots, the learned and the learned-nots, as it were. And especially, I think, even more nowadays, where Torah is supposed to be much more, you know, populist and everything, so that, you know, everybody's supposed to learn it. And I think that we, to some degree, get away from this idea that there's an ownership also, that it's not really supposed to be everyone.
That's heretical in Brooklyn.
What?
That's heretical in Brooklyn.
And in his family.
And in my family. You know what I'm saying? That there should be, you know, nowadays, right?
It's owned by everyone. Everyone's supposed to learn something, but it's to what extent?
No, that's what he said. He didn't say everyone's supposed to learn it. He said, not lilom deha, it's chaymina machazikim ba. Not everyone. I mean,
keep it.
Everyone's supposed to support it, to hold on to it, to grab onto it. And I think that there, like, it is sort of heretical what you said, that there's this notion nowadays that everyone is supposed to become, you know, Atamid Chacham. No. You said it, not me. But, you know, there's an interesting question about the wood versus the gold. Like, is everyone supposed to be the gold? Or somebody's got to be the wood. Because if you don't have wood, and the wood is the backbone of the Aron, and without it...
And what is better?
What?
Which is
it's there's
so
no
each
better.
Each
well, let me ask you this way: what's primary and what's tertiary or secondary?
It seems from the construction that the primary is the wood.
Clearly, because without the wood, there's no gold. The gold has nothing to do
with the three boxes. Because then the gold ones are boring, the wood ones.
No. The golds clearly are not the same thickness. Gold, I think, I imagine that the gold were very thin, very very thin layers. Right.
Swollen works, so didn't he have more merit?
I don't think it was more. It was considered an equal partnership. It was considered an equal partnership. Right, meaning, this guy works, this guy learns, right, primarily. And by the way, it does not absolve either one. Well, maybe it absolves Yisachar, but it does not absolve the Zvulun of, you know, being knowledgeable, of knowing the Torah, of, you know, of going to a shir or whatever. But his job is to work. But he understood that his role was supporting the people who were learning, who were being engaged in the Torah. But you clearly can't have a society where everyone wants to be the gold. Because if everybody wants to be the gold, who's the wood? You know what I'm saying? There's a certain practicality involved in the Aron. Like you said, like couldn't God have like you said, made like the menorah was impossible? Couldn't he have made the Aron the same way?
The wood needs to get married too.
couldn't he have made the Aron the same way?
It's not even that. Without the wood, okay, paying for the gold,
right?
You know, like there's like a serious economic problem,
right?
In those circles, breakdown in those circles, and there are
no. But my point is that Hashem could have said, "Make the whole thing of gold," and they would say, "We can't do it; it's impossible." Like everything else is impossible. You can't lift it. It doesn't make any sense. It's all supernatural. It carries the people who carry it. But the idea is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not want that, because the Torah was given in a sense in the real world to show us that. In the people, there have to be wood people, mostly. And then you also have the gold people as well.
But he still made it so that people couldn't carry it.
Yeah, but they did. You know what I'm saying? I agree with you. I think that that's an important message also, that there's no shame in being the wood. You know what I'm saying? That this is the backbone of what Klal Yisrael is all about. This is the backbone of the Torah. We were not created and put into a world where, you know, where we only care about the spirituality. That in order to have an Aron, it has to be Atzei Shitim. Somebody's got to plant the trees, grow them, cut them down, you know, make them, et cetera, et cetera. Know what to do with them, et cetera, et cetera. 100%.
Bezalel is looked upon as being, you know, like a gadol because he had this, like, this use of the art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that that's something that's very, very valuable and very, very important to understand that, especially in, there's an inherent imbalance, I think, in the religious society in which we live. That, you know, certain people are put up on a pedestal, and then there's a certain, like, you know, okay, you know, what are you going to do? You have to go out and work. Nebuch, you could be a Talmud Chacham, or you didn't learn early enough in life, or whatever. And I think
feel
that
like
that's...
our cycle.
Even so, yeah.
Really? That's so funny.
Subtly? Sure.
Really, I feel, and this is no offense to the rabbi,
yeah.
Distortedly, people respect doctors more than they respect rabbis. I find a very big lack of kavod to Ra and kavod
depends what you do for
them.
Yeah, it depends on what circle.
What you do,
what circle for a living.
A plumber, yeah, people aren't going to...
Not as a profession, not like, oh, he became a rabbi. But like, I don't feel that people...
In the educational system,
no,
ask yourself this question. In the educational system, what is promoted as being the ideal for a person to become? In our educational system.
The ideal for a person to become in our educational system?
No, okay. You heard Rav Yoed say that. When he said that, it appealed to us because it was a vast...
I have never heard it before
exactly.
From an educational institution.
It was a departure, exactly. It was, I mean, even in our educational system,
what
there's a value in the education promotes Torah learning.
Rav Yoed is the Rosh Yeshiva and Tzvia Katif.
He got up in the seventh grade.
Boys High School starting in seventh grade. So he got up and he said, I mean, he said it in the thing that they sent out also, what the goals of the school is, that they are raising... Tamidei Chachamim who have these skills to go out and contribute to the world and in whatever not contribute to the world even but whatever that they all that they have the Limudei Chol that enables them to succeed in their field.
I mean, each skill
the
though
focus
each
of the
skill
entire thing was Torah. But there was a
no, what he said was
that of course it's understood that these B'nai Torah are going to be working.
No, but he said was, it wasn't just that. What he said was that each child should have the sense that he has a critical contribution to make to Am Yisrael in his own way.
Right,
you know what I'm saying? Which is different than, but.
And that's a departure because you're used to hearing them say they must become Tami Decha.
Well, doesn't it?
No,
yes. No, I disagree with you.
In our educational system?
Excuse me.
Work.
Excuse me.
We were in Detroit.
Excuse me. When you go, forget the educational system.
I shouldn't say that.
When you go to school, right? It's understood or expected that every student, when he finishes high school, the ideal students, what do they do?
Goes to Israel and then goes to an Ivy League college.
Stop. Come on.
All of them.
Come on. Stop.
Promoted. Excuse me. So, and I'm
when they go to school, the idea is
teaching him in Joshua, which is in.
Okay. Are we going?
Wait,
can we like stay back on? Let me finish. Make my point. Okay.
Sorry.
In the education system, it's better you go to yeshiva here in Israel,
yeah.
Right? The excellent students go to yeshiva. Okay. And what do they expect to do? They're supposed to go to the army, but they're supposed to go to the yeshiva. And what do they do after they finish yeshiva? The excellent ones. The excellent ones.
Excellent ones.
Right. They stay on and do what?
And learn to be
a rabbi.
Yeah, that's right. Meaning, if you're excellent, you go to the excellent yeshiva. And if you're excellent in the excellent yeshiva, meaning the ideal in the educational system still is clearly emphasis on. Excuse me. Somebody was telling me the other day.
How many girls want to go out with a guy who's in tzniacha?
How many now?
In
they
the
all,
Orthodox
a girl was telling. Excuse me. I had a girl. I was tramping with me in here.
An Israeli.
I had a girl who said. She said to me, she would not go out with a guy in Bar Ilan. She would absolutely not. She would only go out with a bachur in Yeshivat Hasder. Now, of course, she's now 2 years down the road. What's her bachur doing?
He's now at Bar Ilan.
He's now at Bar Ilan. But, you know, right. But this is the message that's clear and
do you mean in
very,
Israel?
Very, oh, yeah. And in America, too. Excuse me, in America, too. The parents are fighting against it. But it's clearly emphasis on the message of the educational system. And I'm gonna, you know, and but the notion has to be that it's all in the context.
Type of circle.
Sure. The notion has to be that it's what?
My uncle calls his son-in-law a rocket scientist. RS rabbinical students.
The rocket scientists, yeah.
Scientist.
But the concept has to be, though, within the framework of the Aron. Yeah, and I think that's what's lacking also, that it's not within the framework of the Aron. Meaning, are you, what is your place in the context of the Torah? Do you see yourself as, yeah, I want to be a rocket scientist, you know, because I want to be a rocket scientist and because that's what we should be? Or, I want to be a rocket scientist because this is my place in Klal Yisrael in the context of building Am Yisrael and being a part of the Aron HaBrit, the Aron HaIdut. And those are very different things.
It's also going back to last week. You're saying, do they, you know, believing that, you know, these skills, whatever I'm getting, it's from the Kodesh Baruch
Hu. Right.
So it's also relating back to last week. Do you know, if they're doing it, they believe this is their place, but is it their place because they're great? Or is it a place because, well, this is what...
I agree totally. And I think that, as just to wrap it up, because we can go on forever, as parents, our job is to instill in children this notion that, yes, you should grow and you should develop and, you know, and it, you want to become an engineer, that's wonderful. But really the focus is, I think, an important aspect of it. To what end? Meaning, why do you want to become an engineer? What is your role in Klal Yisrael? You know, how are you going to build? And I think in Israel, and this is why, you know, it's so much more meaningful here, because everything that you do, if you want to be an engineer, it's not just time you want to have a job because you like engineering. You have the ability to build a bridge in Eretz Yisrael. You have the ability to, you know, to further what Am Yisrael is supposed to be. And when you see it in that context, I think it becomes that much more meaningful, and it gives, I think, children a sense of purpose to what they do, rather than just having a job that they have. And I think that's a beautiful idea when you say, well, you want to be a part of the Aron, you want to be the Atzei Shidim, that's great. But it's got to be part of the Aron. It's not just something external. And that's the way that we can add very much value and meaning, not just to our children's lives, but to ours as well. All right?